So you ready to do this? All right, let's roll with the news.
It's time for the most insightful wrestling show today. Wrestling Weekly is on the air.
Are we ready?
I'm very excited.
Please join us in the chat room at WrestlingWeekly.com to submit questions for tonight's guests.
Hello, this is Mick Foley, and you are listening to Doc Young.
He is my friend.
And the inimitable Les Thatcher.
He's a legend. He's one of the greatest of all time.
You're listening to Wrestling Weekly.
The most dominant force in this business today.
And it all starts tonight.
Yeah.
We're the stars of this piece of...
And now, your host for Wrestling Weekly, Doc Young and legendary Les Thatcher.
Doc Young and Les Thatcher with you here at Wrestling Weekly. Welcome, everybody. Got a great show for you tonight. A little cross-promotion with the Steel Cage. Jonathan Hayes is going to be on the program. Also, the Assassin, Joe Hamilton from, you guys know him as Jody Hamilton. He's from Deep South. He owns Deep South Wrestling.
He does.
Yes, he does. He's going to be our special guest. And Les, I know that you have been feeling under the weather a little bit this weekend.
Yes, I have. And, of course, one of the guests we were supposed to have tonight, Georgiana Macropoulos,
Yes. Also
is under the weather currently. And so she's not going to be on with us tonight, so we're going to have to reschedule her, and we want to give her a shout-out and wish her the best. And I know how she feels. Man, yeah, I went down with some kind of virus or the flu bug or whatever it happened to be last Thursday, and I'm just coming around to where I've got a little bit of energy.
Yeah.
And I may have lost a couple pounds because I couldn't keep anything down, and what was going down was coming back up. So.
Yeah, good. It's good to see you back on your feet. On the radio, back on the show.
Actually, I'm sitting down, so.
Well, you know what I mean.
I'm not doing this 2 hours on my feet, brother.
Back over the weather.
yes. But, I was just on Steel Cage. We were talking about SummerSlam, which you and I are going to do. And of course, we have to figure out who won the weekly I Pick, You Pick.
The pay-per-view prediction game.
Yes, the pay-per-view prediction game.
Yes.
But, of course, I think the first order of business here is, for you anyway, and the Doc Young fans, is that Layla won Diva 06.
That's right. Layla was the announced the winner of the $250,000 2006 WWE Diva Search on Wednesday. She also suffered her first official injury when she knocked down Todd Grissom and mounted him.
Yes,
live
did.
On the program, Layla reportedly suffered a bruised hand.
Let me say that I am not so old that escaped me, that she mounted him. No, you know what? If I found this as a valuable, addition to the wrestling community, she was definitely the one I would have picked. And some other people said the same thing. I thought from the very beginning, she seemed to have the best personality, the most talent.
Mm-hmm. She had the most charisma.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm going to confess, come out of the closet, and say I didn't watch the whole thing, but I did DVR the thing on Wednesday night, and while I was convalescing over the weekend, I fast-forwarded through it, and I did watch part of it. Wow, it was an hour full of not a lot.
It was an hour long, that's for sure.
Yes, it was an hour long. And the fact that I think it pulled a 1.9 rating, which was, I thought, pretty amazing, considering.
Yeah, that was pretty bad.
I thought, geez, there's a lot of Doc Youngs in the world.
Hey, what can I say? What can I say?
What can you say?
I called it last week, Les. I said, don't even bother watching it. Layla's going to win.
Yeah, and of course, that probably was the highlight of SummerSlam for you, was the shower scene where all the divas took her in the shower and spanked her.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay, well.
It was a sweet Sunday for me.
That was the one thing we didn't talk about on Steel Cage, so you can elaborate on that. I'll tell you, of course, and this is going to happen as there's more companies springing up, more people hitting the TV. Of course, the MTV thing is, everybody says not for certain. I say it is. It's just a matter of MTV making the announcement.
Right.
Suppose they're going to start doing their tapings in October. That's going on the air. Then the Marvin Ward production out of Virginia, which is going on that MAV TV cable network. if these things fly, if these things are successful, you're going to see guys looking for their releases in places. And I don't know if you've heard this, but a couple guys during the weekend of the TNA pay-per-view were asking for their releases.
Wow. No, didn't know that.
Yeah, they were. And since it hasn't become public knowledge, I don't do the National Enquirer thing. But, yeah, two of the prominent guys who have been there quite some time.
Something to look for, guys,
in
the news.
Yeah, well, you know, it's if you got a bargaining chip, and that was, to me, the great, I mean, if there was something really extremely positive about the Monday Night Wars, is it made everybody money.
Yeah.
And most of all, the wrestlers.
Oh, yeah.
And when I say this, looking at it from a wrestler's perspective, for everybody concerned, is that, you know, the wrestlers aren't the best-paid professional athletes in the world. And they are professional athletes, whether you like it or you don't.
Right.
In that situation, they had, you know, there was always, well, you know, if you don't want me, somebody else may.
Mm-hmm. And they all made extraordinary amounts of money comparatively.
And I think that possibly they're seeing, too, that, you know, we can talk about this later. ECW had a couple new faces, I guess, at their house shows, and I don't know if we'll see them on TV tonight or not. Matt Stryker, theirs, not mine. I always make that designation. His spelled Striker. Mine's spelled Stryker.
Right.
And I think mine's a better wrestler, but anyway, that's neither here nor there.
Matt Stryker, the non-teacher.
Huh? Yes, me. Well, he can teach, but he teaches wrestling.
Right.
Anything. But anyway, Bob Holly. And I think Holly will, you know, honestly, with a lot of the young green guys they've got in ECW, I think Holly will be a good addition in terms of a, you know, not a trainer as such, but as a teacher. That was one of the valuable things, and we'll talk, when we talk to Joe Hamilton later in the show, that's something he and I can obviously get into, is how we learned. And it wasn't by wrestling guys at our own level all the time.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's, you know, that's Holly is the best addition. Stryker still has a lot to learn.
Holly could make a great locker room leader over there at ECW.
Yeah. If, you know, and I know a lot of people are detracted, you know, are down on Bob for a lot of reasons. But he's honestly, he goes out there and he busts his hump. He gives 100%. He can perform. He certainly wasn't going to get a huge push in SmackDown, on SmackDown or on Raw, obviously. So I think, you know, he's in a good position.
Yeah, a lot of people, you know, ever since Toughen Up and everything, have been taking close looks at Bob Holly and his attitude and where it goes. But, I mean, you can say all that stuff, but you can't say anything about his ring work. You can't say anything bad about it.
Well, you know, and he has the attitude that if you can't keep up with him, then get the hell out of his way. And I can't say that that's wrong either. And I think Joe Hamilton would express that same situation, you know?
Yeah.
I know, as Joe will probably tell you, and I'll tell you, as young guys, you went in there, buddy, when the veteran said, speed it up, you better speed it up. You didn't, you know, if you lagged behind, you weren't going to get, that wasn't going to be an opportunity that was going to be presented to you again,
mm-hmm.
you know, at some point. I saw, you know, of course, you know, Ring of Honor had the big tour over in England. And one of my trainees, Nigel McGuinness, heard all this great stuff about this tremendous match he had with Brian Danielson, American Dragon, to unify. It was a unification of the pure title, which Nigel had, Ring of Honor, and Ring of Honor's world title, which Danielson had. And I just, if you go on MyTube, there's a clip. And I watched it, and to say I was frightened, I would be what I need to say. I mean, Nigel, I had emailed Nigel and told him I'd read heard about the match. He was still in Europe when I emailed him.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard about the match and congratulated him, told him how proud I was of him. And when he emailed me back, he said, if you can see me now, I look like hell. And when I saw this, I mean, it was overboard. It was too much. If you watch it, they were bouncing his head off the ring post hard way. I mean, there was no work about it. And he said they did a close-up interview of him, just like from the shoulders up. And he had swelling up on the left side of his temple, which projected out a good inch or more.
Wow.
I mean, he was split hard way, but, I mean, more than that, just, you know, and I'm thinking, my God, concussions, brain damage. You know, I look at this, and this kid is like one of my kids. And you've heard, the people that listen to our show know that. I mean, the people that the kids that I train, it's like, if they do something wrong, I'll probably be the first to get in their face. But I love them. You know,
right. Mm-hmm.
I spend too much time with them not to care about them. And I will say to him when I talk to him or see him the same thing I said to Mick Foley about coming off the top of the cage and about taking 10 chair shots in a rock. Okay, you did it. Don't you ever do it again.
Right.
Don't be stupid. I mean, there's a time, you know, if that's what it took to entertain those fans, then I say screw them, and I can't say it any nicer than that. I mean, here's the deal. As a performer myself, you want to go out there, you want to entertain the fans, and I understand when the adrenaline kicks in, you've got a full house. They had like 1,400, I guess, in that place, which was close to being packed as far as I can, you know, from what I've read. And, of course, everybody was into this. If you're having that kind of a match, and they obviously, everybody said it was a four-star, you know, match, and I didn't see that much of it. The clip was basically him bouncing Nigel's head off the post in a couple other spots. But I understand. You know, I've been in the ring with that feeling, and your feet are about 2 inches off the floor, and you think, gosh, can we keep going? If somebody give me an oxygen tank, I don't ever want to stop.
Right.
I want to keep going, and how high can we take these people? But at some point, it's more important what you're doing to yourself. And here's the thing, whether it's the promoters or the fans, if you put, I mean, our business is, and Joe will tell you the same thing later on in the show, he mentions it in his book, our business is dangerous enough as it is. It was dangerous when he and I met in 1963, and we weren't, and I know a lot of tough guys in this business that would not do half the crap that goes on today. And I mean, but they would take your ass in a bar and whip you from one side of the building to the other, and not think twice about it. But here's the thing: all these people that are cheering you on, and like the Romans in the Colosseum, for Christ's sake, they're not going to push your wheelchair around when you're hobbled.
Right.
They're not going to pay your medical bills. And I don't care if you're getting a six-figure payoff or a $6 payoff; it is not worth it to go to that extreme. I mean, that is just, it's overboard. It's past the point of good common sense. And when I mean, nothing shocks me anymore after 46 years in this business, but when I saw that, I thought, oh, my God. And I will. When I see him, I will hug him and tell him, man, please, don't ever do that again.
Absolutely. We got to get a message out to the people. I don't know who all knows this. You're going to hear more about it, but the Sci-Fi Network is going to be airing Monday Night Raw next week, and not USA Network.
Except in California, right, where it will air on
it'll air on USA at 10 o'clock. I'm sorry, 11 o'clock Eastern.
Yeah,
and maybe also for September 4th. So keep in mind, guys, next week Raw is going to be on the Sci-Fi Network and possibly the week after that. A new DVD has come out, Les.
The McMahon.
And apparently, from what I hear, it stars the legendary Les Thatcher.
Does it really?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I got an email this morning, and somebody said, I just watched the new McMahon DVD, and I was surprised to see Les Thatcher was in it.
Well, you know what? They did when they were in Cincinnati interviewing myself, Bill Cunningham, who does WLW 500 radio here, the Clear Channel, who was a friend of Pillman's, and Kim Wood, who was a strength coach for years and years with the Bengals, and like a father figure to Pill. They interviewed myself over at Kim's house, and they asked me if I'd do some stuff for Vince. And I said, yeah, I didn't know if it got used or not, tell you the truth. I know I've heard, you know, some of the people that were on there. But I didn't know if mine was volatile enough.
Yeah, you never know if it's going to end up on the cutting room floor or not.
Yeah, I really didn't. So I knew they had, because I'd sent them some, I had taken the guy, a producer that was here, some of the, like the Pillman show programs and some of the pictures from that show and stuff for them to, you know, if they possibly could use. And the Pillman thing, and he said, well, would you mind interviewing for the McMahon thing, too? And I said, no, not at all. And so I did, and I know when he sent me back the stuff from the Pillman show, he wrote me a note and said, you know, appreciate your help on this, and mentioned when the DVD came out, didn't mention anything about the McMahon, and then, you know, so I didn't know, but cool, you know, that's great.
So now you're going to have to buy it to watch yourself.
Well, yes, I guess I will. They're not going to sell me one for free.
I know, that's horrible. People are on the DVD and they don't even get a free one.
That's terrible. Whatever. Well, it's not like they can't afford it, right?
Also on the DVD, besides Les, of course, Stephanie McMahon reveals that Vince had proposed a storyline involving an incest angle where he would be the father of Stephanie's baby. Stephanie rejected the idea, and then another storyline idea was thrown out about Shane being the father instead, and again, Stephanie said no. Other things on the DVD include Vince saying that he wanted to put Triple H and Stephanie's wedding on pay-per-view.
Well, you know what? All I can say, I'm laughing. I'm not sure it's funny. But you know, once a promoter, always a promoter, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, my wife and I got married in my gym. And we're going to have the guy who gave my wife away, who she actually babysat for, Rosie, is going to be on with us in a couple weeks.
Absolutely.
But you know, that was just what we did. You know, I mean, honestly, at that point, my mom and dad had passed away. My kids weren't in town. That was my family,
yeah.
You know. But we just, well, we did. The funny thing was, Matt Stryker and Cody Hawk stood up for me. And, of course, we didn't announce it, you know, like come to the wedding. It was just everybody came to the Tuesday night show. And so Stryker went out and said, this is not a work. This is not a part of the show. This is legit. Les is really getting married. And the funny thing was, the minister, I kept, like, he was nervous because I think he kept thinking somebody was going to jump me, right, or something. And I know when we sat down with him to line us up, he said, well, is this legitimate? I said, yes, it's legit. But we joked about things like this before. We were teasing a guy years ago, another wrestler and I, about getting married in the ring. And we said, you know, and just as you're ready to say I do, we named the heel, I forget who it was at the time, can come jump you, you get juice, right?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, we can't. But anyway, no, I mean, so, you know, the incest thing I have no use for. I mean, no,
yeah.
That's totally all. I mean, that's, God.
I would be interested to see what kind of ratings it advises.
If they lived besides Stanford, Connecticut, if they lived in Happy Holler, Virginia or Kentucky or, you know what I'm saying, or Mississippi.
Right.
Maybe, okay, they could do the Clampett thing or something, I guess. But I wouldn't ask my family to subject themselves to anything like that.
Absolutely not. I'm waiting for Triple H and Stephanie's kid to get to be about 4 or 5 years old, and Vince tries to put his T-ball game on pay-per-view. You know, I'm just waiting for that. But Vince also talks about the XFL, the Katie Vick angle, the infamous Jim Ross skits. And Stephanie admits on camera that the only reason Vince hired Eric Bischoff was so he could say that he worked for him.
I'm sure it's true.
I'm sure it's true, too.
I don't doubt that a minute. I'll be interested to watch it. Of course, it's going to be slanted to the, you know, WWE way of seeing things, which, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Also, WWE has an article up about Holly Race's World League Wrestling promotion holding tryouts in September with WWE and Japanese NOAH scouts.
Yeah, five of the NOAH wrestlers. Don't ask me whoever. Marufuji, I think Kenta, Kobayashi, I'm not sure. Anyway, they're all going to be at Harley's. That's September 19th through the 23rd. You can get more information at HarleyRace.com. I think it's $500. But here's the deal. A couple guys every year out of this thing get a shot going to Japan and training at NOAH's dojo. They end up wrestling for NOAH, where they can. That's not a guaranteed deal.
All right.
But also I think somebody from WWE will be there this year, too. They were last year. Well, I think maybe it's Teddy DiBiase, simply because his boys are training there as well. But whatever the point is, yeah, it's a good shot to train with Harley, who if I said he was a bad trainer, I'd be shooting myself in the foot too, because we do have a book out to
right.
Called Professional Wrestling, yeah, workout and instructional guide. But anyway, that's September 19th through 23rd. And while we're plugging that, don't forget Les and Dr. Tom, September 8th and 9th, will be in Denver. For Fusion Pro Wrestling and Altitude Pro Wrestling Academy. You can go to FusionProWrestling.com to sign up for that or see more information. We're going to, the whole affair of that weekend is going to be at the Red Lion Hotel. That's where we're going to have the camp. That's where we're staying. And Fusion will promote a show there on Saturday night. And always have a good time out there. My Matt Stryker will also be there, I've told. And will probably be, end up helping us with the training. But we'll always have a good time out there. And it's good company, and we're looking forward to that, too. ECW, in December, is doing December to Dismember in Augusta, Georgia.
Yes. It's kind of it sounds so much like an indie title, but we'll have to see. It does kind of fit ECW style, so.
You know what? One of the toughest things in indie or in wrestling today must be everybody's got to have a name for their damn show. I never had, you know, I never went, what name are you going to name the show? I said, I'm not going to name it anything. I mean, but I see that, you know, when I go on any of these indie websites, they all have a name for their show, right? The show has got a name, and why, I'm not sure. It doesn't make the show any better. Sometimes it doesn't matter what the name is, the show's horrible.
So you can remember what, you know, like who wrestled on what show.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, okay.
I have no idea.
I was guess in part because a lot of these indie feds do sell DVDs now and tapes, so that's, I guess that's part of the deal, too. You know, I don't know what's happened, but I understand there's been some sort of upheaval in OVW. Robert Briscoe, who's been a referee down there for, like, ever, has quit. I'm not sure what the answer to that is. I haven't talked to Danny Davis or Jimmy Cornette. Of course, Jimmy may not know. He's not allowed in his own company any longer. But,
right.
I don't know. I was under the impression that the trainer, and what I mean, I'm not talking about it like Al Snow trainer, but I'm talking about a physical guy, you know, do massage and work on joints and that sort of thing. My understanding was that he had left simply because of the he and his father were starting some sort of business. The Robert Briscoe thing really surprised me because Robert's been like a Danny's referee like forever down there, even before Jimmy became part of the company and before there was any affiliation with WWF or WWE. And also, I was told that they lost their affiliate. But I think that's in part to do because of the combining of the WB and UPN networks.
Yeah.
Because I know HWA, my old company, is on the UPN station in Dayton, Cody told me a week or so ago that they're just that station is owned by another bigger network affiliate, CBS, ABC, whatever it is in Dayton. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. I forget at this time, but they're just closing that station down because it was cable only to begin with.
Wow!
So they're losing their TV up there as well.
Man.
So maybe that's the case. Here's the funny thing: OVW in Louisville was pulling better numbers than the syndicated WWE shows that were being played there.
Yeah.
They were. No, that's
true.
That
just goes to show you, yeah.
No, they really were. They really were. And so anyway, that's neither here nor there. But yeah, so I don't know what's going on down there. I've got to hook up with my friend Corny and get him on the show anyway.
Right.
What's up with TNA and...
Now, I did a show last week, did my first ring announcing for FEW, and I have a blog up telling my little adventure. Les, I think you'll find it funny. I want you to go look at it, too.
Is this on MySpace?
This is on MySpace.com.
Oh.
It's MySpace.com/DocYoung. You can all check it out, and you can find out how horrible my weekend went with FEW and the Tracy Motel.
The Tracy Motel. That already sounds bad.
The Tracy Motel.
Did they put you up there, or did you pick this place on your own?
I picked this place on my own.
Okay.
Next time, I'm going to get promoters' suggestions for where to stay.
See, there's...
Put it that way.
If you'd have asked the old man, he would have said, Doc, ask them where the people stay that come in to work for them. You know? And you know what? That's one of the things all I asked was a clean, neat, decent hotel. I don't need the Taj Mahal for any stretch. You know, I mean, I'm not that egotistical. It's just long, you know, but I don't want it to be in the slums, and I don't want it to be dirty.
Right.
And so, but obviously, I'll have to go check out.
Yeah, you can read all about how I ended up stuck there, but it's a cool little story. But you know, it's just my weekend.
MySpace.com/DocYoung.
Yes, okay. And the Doc Young part is one word. So,
well, of course.
We're going to take a quick break, guys. We're going to finish up the news with our first sort of guest kind of crossover thingy for with Jonathan Hayes. Thingy, I learned that in broadcasting school.
Okay, good. You paid to learn that, too.
Yeah, I went to community college, as you could tell.
All right.
But Jonathan Hayes from the Steel Cage, he's the one of the hosts over there. He's going to join us. And we're going to finish up the news. We've got SummerSlam. We're going to find out, of course, who won the pay-per-view prediction game between myself and Les. And then we've got the assassin, Joe Hamilton, the owner of Deep South Wrestling. He's going to be on the program as well.
Just that, but we'll talk about that later. Go
absolutely.
On.
We'll really get into that. Right as of now, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, like I said, Jonathan Hayes is going to be on the show. You're listening to Doc Young and Les Thatcher on Wrestling Weekly. We'll be right back, guys. Stick around.
Wrestling Weekly will return to all the fun right after this.
What are you doing? You having fun?
I'm having a blast.
So many of these wrestling websites nowadays strongly promote their pay-per-view play-by-plays as if they were something unbelievably special. The problem is that they are not special. In fact, they're all the same. Nothing separates one from the other, and if you've seen one, you've seen them all. However, there is one site that has original play-by-play that's different from all the rest. 4WWrestling.com, a proud supporter of the Voice of Wrestling radio show, invites you to witness the ultimate play-by-play experience live during every WWE pay-per-view. And if you're asking what makes them so different, well, 4W-Wrestling.com is the only site to put up pictures from the actual pay-per-view as it happens. You see what's taken place on the pay-per-view instead of just reading about it. If you're not buying a pay-per-view, but you're looking for the next best thing, 4W-Wrestling.com. Online wrestling evolved.
Hey, do you find that wrestling is more to you than just a passing fancy? Do you need to know more about your favorite wrestler? Do you absolutely have to know all about their history? You, my friend, aren't just passionate. You're obsessed.
Geez, you know, that information might have been a little more useful to me yesterday.
We have a fix for that.
Throw me a frickin' bone here. Need the info.
Check out obsessedwithwrestling.com. All the info you need to know about everyone. Located at www.obsessedwithwrestling.com. Histories, title info, bios, aliases, real names.
Once again, things that could have been brought to my attention yesterday!
If wrestling isn't just a passion, but an obsession, check out www.obsessedwithwrestling.com today.
Hi, my name is Adam Newdelman, but I play the Phantom on the radio. I'm here to remind you that, oh, screw that, my book, Mysteries of Wrestling South, is available at finer bookstores everywhere. That stupid fake voice, I hate it. I wrote a book along with Sir Adam Kleinberg called Mysteries of Wrestling. It has the questions that you wanted answered. Why does Steve Austin hate Jeff Jarrett? Are referees really blind and stupid and dumb? Who is actually the toughest wrestler in the business outside of the ring? Hulk Hogan, The Rock, Stone Cold Steve Austin, Kamala. We get down and dirty with insider facts you've never read about anywhere else. So what are you waiting for? It makes a great stocking stuffer. You're too short, you buy three of them, you get tall, you just stand on them. Mysteries of Wrestling Solved by ECW Press, written by Sir Adam Kleinberg and Adam the Phantom Newdelman. Available everywhere. It's done. The plug is done. I'm done. I didn't sell it well enough. There's naked pictures of China in there. Okay? Thank you.
Business Advances Web Hosting. With plans as low as $2.95 per month, you can get the professional web hosting solution that you need.
Visit www.businessadvances.com.
A total hosting solution at a fraction of the price.
Register today and we'll give you 100 free templates to get you started and even more freebies.
www.businessadvances.com. Simply business as usual.
News and information on total non-stop action wrestling. It's TNAWrestling.com. TNAWrestling.com. Log on right now and get your fix of all things TNA Wrestling. Event photos, streaming video, and all of the backstage gossip is just one click away. Plus, right now, you can find special savings in our merchandise area with a complete line of DVDs featuring Nevermore, The Best of Raven, Enigma, The Best of Jeff Hardy, and Phenomenal, The Best of AJ Styles. Plus, all of our monthly pay-per-view events on DVD as well. And don't forget to check out photos of our lovely ladies in the knockout section. It's your online home for total non-stop action wrestling. It's TNAWrestling.com. TNAWrestling.com.
It's like a pulse that refuses to die. After 4 years, the chants are as loud as ever. These three letters changed history.
This ain't WCW.
Revolutionized sports entertainment.
This ain't Monday Night Raw.
And brought the wrestling world to its knees.
Oh my God!
Tonight, the revolution is reborn. Welcome to the underground. Welcome to the cutting edge. Welcome to the extreme.
This, my friend, is ECW.
He considers himself God's gift to wrestling, and millions of his faithful agree. With nearly 4 hours of footage and exclusive commentary and matches, this DVD chronicles Daniel's rise from Chicago's Windy City Wrestling to the Asylum in Nashville, and finally to the top of TNA. TNA Home Video presents Heaven Sent, Hell Bound, The Best of Christopher Daniels. Available at most retailers and TNAWrestling.com.
Doc Young and Les Thatcher back with you at Wrestling Weekly. Right now on the line from the radio show The Steel Cage, based out in Cincinnati, it is Jonathan Hayes. Jonathan, thanks for being on the show with us.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me.
Yeah, we're doing a little cross-promotion tonight, Doc. Doc gets jealous, John.
He does.
He said, did you say anything to talk about me? No, he was listening to the show to be sure I didn't knock him or anything.
No, I wasn't. I was listening to the show, but, you know, I was just...
whatever. Well, Doc, lead us down the primrose path here.
All right, so we're still going through the news here for the week, and Dave Meltzer over at the Wrestling Observer has a story up reporting about an apparent case of Hulk Hogan and Triple H trying to one-up each other at SummerSlam on Sunday. It began with Hogan when he did the DX chop, the crotch chop, after defeating Randy Orton in their match. Later on in the evening, after beating the McMahons, Triple H did the Hogan ear cupping thing. But he didn't get near the reaction that Hogan did. In fact, very early in the match, when Triple H did the Are You Ready DX gimmick, the crowd wasn't very vocal about it. But some people believe in the back that Hogan punked them out. But it's apparently not how management sees it. Triple H was running around, I guess, backstage at Raw last night going, I've got three words for you. Suck it, brother.
Jonathan, you lead.
First of all, I thought they were grown men, but okay, go ahead, John.
Well, you know, pretty much, you know, Hogan, you know, as we've talked about before, Hogan, he knows how to work the crowd, and if they're going to have a battle of one-upmanship between Triple H and Hulk Hogan, Hogan's going to win hands down.
Yeah, I got to go along with John on that. Well, you know, that's the thing. Everyone talks about the reaction that Hogan gets when he comes to the ring, no matter what city it's in. If you watch it, he does the exact same thing in every city, and while he's asking you to quiet, but the way he looks, the face he puts on, the body language is saying, God, I love this, keep it up.
Yeah.
You know, and, I mean, he's a player, boys. That's I mean, not that Helmsley is a slouch in that department, but there's not a better guy playing a political wrestling game today or ever, I guess, than Hulk Hogan.
Right. And you're right, he does the same thing every time, and it's almost like the way Angle comes out, and everybody knows they're supposed to say, you suck. Hogan comes out, everybody knows they're supposed to be at their loudest. It's kind of been ingrained into the fans' minds.
Well,
in
you
my
know,
opinion.
The other thing, too, is you got to remember, you don't see him every week either.
That's true.
I mean, and you got to figure most of the people that show up and buy tickets for Raw are people that watch it on TV when they're not there,
mm-hmm.
right? So it is fresh, and Helmsley's been on a few shows the last few years. So,
right.
Well, for that matter, anybody that's on steady is not going to get the same reaction that somebody has been an icon, a legend, whatever you want to call him, when he shows up occasionally.
Absolutely. A photo of Chris Masters has been circulating around the internet, showing a noticeably smaller version of himself from a recent OVW show. Masters had been suspended a while back for reportedly failing a drug test. You could see the picture. If you want to go look at it, you can see it at WrestleView.com. But it's Chris, and it looks like Chris Masters' little brother. So you're not gonna really be able to tell who he is when he comes back. He's like half the man he used to be, literally.
Jonathan, house guest first, go.
Well, you know, I have seen the photo, and I was just blown away by it. I mean, he looked like a teenager. He was a skinny boy. I mean, I'm talking smaller in size than like a Rob Conway, and I don't see how they're going to be able to bring him back and have him packaged necessarily as the masterpiece. Long term, though, I think it's actually probably a good thing for him. You look at guys like Batista who are so built up, and then the muscle tears that they get, you know, over the course of their career, and you get a guy like AJ Styles who's not quite as bulky, a little bit more lean and toned, and he can go through and do incredible moves and not walk away with those kind of injuries. So I think long term, losing a bit of the definition may be good for Chris Masters.
Well, let me when I start here, Doc mentioned that he was failed a drug test. I don't know whether that's yay or nay, quite frankly. But I did understand through some other people that he was having some emotional problems with it. And for those of you who don't understand, I've spent a lot of time around bodybuilding. I competed as a bodybuilder. This I can say, and I'll take a lie detector test, drug test, whatever you want. I've never done the juice. Because I didn't start competing as a bodybuilder until I was age 47. And I didn't see the value of spending all that money on anabolics to win a $50 trophy. It just didn't make a lot of sense to me. It was something I did more just, you know, to fill the gap that I wasn't wrestling anymore. But anyway, a lot of bodybuilders, some of the guys back in the WBF, we were talking about Vince, and that's part of the, I'm not sure how that's portrayed on the McMahon DVD, but when the drug trials with Vince were going on, all those guys had to go clean.
Mm-hmm.
And one guy in particular there, who I've helped train with some professional bodybuilders. I worked for Perillo Performance here in Cincinnati as helping plan diets and training professional bodybuilders up to the Mr. and Miss Olympia level. And one of the guys told me that one of the guys with Vince was psychotic and on the verge of suicide, because a lot of guys rely on that is their persona. I've known guys who would cycle down but never off simply because of, you know, that was their whole thing.
Was he psychotic from quitting clean cold turkey?
Well, in part, I say cold turkey, but it was just that was who he was in his own mind, mm-hmm. right? And the other part is your system shuts down. One of the guys, I was told, Troy Zuccolotta, who was one of the guys on Vince's crew of bodybuilders, had been on such a heavy stack for so long that when he came off, his body was secreting testosterone at about the level of an 11 or 12-year-old child.
Oh, man.
So he was just soft and very, you know, I mean, just it was impossible. And until they could use herbs and stuff to bring his natural, you see, here's the other thing. You got to realize that when you get on, that shuts your natural production of testosterone down.
Right.
And so when you come off, your body, it hasn't been secreting anything. So it's not aware that it's supposed to at that point in time. It's not like turning the water faucet on and off. And so, I mean, a lot of these, and some of these guys, here's the other thing. You can maintain some good physique without and a good diet. You can stay in shape. There's guys in our business that I know when they're on and when they're off because you can see that.
Mm-hmm.
There are other guys, and here's the other thing. There is no test for growth hormone, for human growth hormone. In bodybuilding, because there was a period of time when the IFBB, the International Federation of Bodybuilders, the WIDER organization, was testing.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it was kind of a joke, too. Well, if you saw the year that the WBF tested, Gary Stridham, who won. There were two guys. I forget who the other guy was at the time, but Stridham looked 10 times better than anybody else. And it was obvious he was on growth. And they could have tested him until the cows came home, and they weren't going to find that. But here's the other part, too. There's a lot of hard work involved. It's not just drugs. And I believe that Masters could hold size with a good diet, but possibly his stack was so big that when he came off, he's having the same problems that Zuccolotta had, you know, that his own body is not secreting anything worthwhile, at least not at this point in time.
All right.
So, yeah, but I agree with John. To bring him back with the masterpiece and all the power thing, looking the way he looks, it's just, well, I won't say they won't do it, but I'd say it'd be rather absurd to try.
Right. The Pro Wrestling Torch is reporting that Kevin Nash is continuing to negotiate with TNA for contract extension, as his contract with the company is going to expire next month. Some have labeled Nash not competing against Chris Sabin at the Hard Justice pay-per-view last Sunday as a way for Nash to gain extra leverage in the negotiation process because he was supposed to lose that match. Although some may feel that's the case, Nash did make it known to many people backstage at the pay-per-view that his neck was legitimately bothering him and was also said to have been displeased with the proposed booking of the match, though. According to reports, the match was booked to have Nash dominate Chris Sabin for 8 minutes and suddenly lose to Sabin by a quick pinfall. Nash made it clear to many within TNA that he wants to wrestle Sabin in a cage match next month and lose in a way that will help elevate Sabin. He's been described as a huge advocate for guys like Alex Shelley, Chris Sabin, Sanjay Dutt, and the entire X Division as a whole right now. However, there are said to be a number of people within TNA very skeptical of Nash's current motivations considering his past.
John?
Well, of course, I work in radio, so I deal with a lot of words, but, you know, as far as being a newsman and covering the big political stories, my attitude's always been actions speak louder than words. And when I see Kevin Nash, I don't see those actions. You know, Chris Sabin, excellent wrestler, and in this whole program, I've yet to see him really get over and get that push that I thought he should be getting. And if Kevin has a problem with the booking, then he needs to go out there and say, look, this is how I want to book it. This is how I want to get Chris Sabin over, and then let's do it. I'm not hearing those solutions from Kevin Nash, so I just think this is just another political ploy on his part.
I was under the impression that Nash's contract was up, like, with that pay-per-view. So of course, I don't know, none of us know, obviously, except TNA and Kevin Nash.
Right.
But I have heard that because of, legitimate or not, it's kind of like the little boy that cried wolf. It's happened before, and several people within the company were just, you know, taken aback by it and weren't interested in pursuing it past that. Now, whether they do or not, I don't know. Chris Sabin is a hell of a mechanic, a hell of a good worker. He lacks a little bit in personality. I think this whole thing with Nash has done a lot to get Shelley over.
Yeah.
And turn him into a personality. I did hear that one of the agents reamed both those guys in a match for not selling. And I said, yay. I stood up and cheered.
Yeah.
Because that's one of the problems for me with the whole X thing. Is it's just movement and no, it's kind of like Lucha, and I'm not much into that because there's no story to it. But I don't know. I didn't see the huge value in this thing, it wasn't because it was Kevin necessarily. I just didn't see the value in the whole deal. I didn't see how it was going to turn the X Division into it was going to make them, you know. I think the strongest thing for the X Division is no longer in the X Division, and that would be Styles and Daniels.
Yeah, but Styles and Daniels, they've been pretty much representing the X Division for the last couple of years.
Well, I know that, but I'm saying now they're more into out working with Well, see you there again, John. When I used to tease Doxy. What is the X Division? He say, well, it's no limits. I say, exactly what does that mean? And that's my whole problem with the X Division to begin with. I don't understand what it is. So I guess Nash could be a part of it. I thought the skits at Nash and Shelley, you know, the whole thing about where were the wrestlers supposed to be from, Bangladesh or so, I forget.
Something like that. Madagascar.
Yeah, yeah, that was it. Yeah, Madagascar. Kevin is a funny guy. If you watch Longest Yard, Kevin was just being Kevin. My wife doesn't know him, and I was laughing, and she said, well, he's a good actor. I said, no, he's not a good actor. He's just being himself.
Yeah.
He's probably had a joint or a couple drinks. I don't know.
Yeah, but Nash is funny.
Yeah, Kevin can goof and get over.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know that it's, and like I say, it's not about Kevin necessarily with me. I don't know that where they're going with the thing and how it's going to get anybody over. And like I say, with Chris Sabin, I've met him. I like him. He's mechanically very sound. It's just he needs to develop, meaning the company, needs to develop a personality for a lot of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you, the guy who's got personality as far as an excise guy is Young.
Yeah.
I mean, he's entertaining as hell to me.
I know, and we had Young on the show, and he was real serious and really out of character. And the guy he plays on TV, it just seems like it's two different guys. But he can turn it on when he wants to.
Yeah. What's your feeling overall, John, about a TNA situation as it stands now?
I don't know. They just, to me, they almost seem like they're in a holding pattern where they're trying to do, in some aspects, trying to please everybody instead of just focusing on one particular style, one particular product and getting it over. They're trying to do the ECW hardcore style. They're trying to do the high-flying style with the X Division. They've got their wrestling. They've got their sports entertainment all in a 60-minute show. And at times it just seems too much for the time limit they've got.
Yeah, I agree. And I think they're not an alternative. They're just very similar to McMahon.
And I thought that when you said they're trying to please everybody, I thought you were going to be talking about an aspect of their booking, which is what it seems to be. Nobody seems to want to lose cleanly in TNA. It's always got to be some kind of run-in or something happens.
Well, you know, Doc, that's something we were talking about on the Steel Cage. You know, I brought up both companies, it's outside interference, run-ins, it's become boresome, I think. You know, things like that are pull-aparts. They're valuable when they're done sparingly.
Mm-hmm.
But when they become a part of your weekly show, it's like, okay. You know.
Yeah, remember toward the end of the NWO run, and people were just rolling their eyes when the NWO would ruin the main event? I mean, you knew it was coming.
Sure.
And it just irked you so bad.
Yeah.
And that's basically what's going on right now with these run-ins.
Well, you know, here's my other problem. I think this whole thing with Earl Hebner and Slick Johnson, is that his name, the referee
with
the shorts?
Yes.
He's their Miz, somebody said.
Yeah, I guess he is.
You know, we need more time. And they are, from what I understand, they are talking to Spike. Oh, there's something we hadn't talked about. Goldberg is in a holding pattern for, was it 90 days?
I think so.
With Spike to find him a vehicle or at least to talk to TNA or whatever the case may be. But, they are talking to Spike about 2 hours. There's no day picked or time or time slot or anything, and it's nothing concrete. It may not even happen. But they are in talks about it. But, you know, everyone says, we've only got an hour. Well, if you've only, what the hell are you doing with Earl Hebner and Slick Johnson, for Christ's sake? I mean, why? What's valuable to that? What is that angle doing for your company?
Yeah, and to think about it, Monday Night Raw was 1 hour long for years and years.
Well, you know, professional wrestling, with the exception of and we talked to Joe Hamilton about that later, but the only reason Atlanta ended up being 2 hours was when the War of Atlanta was over. Turner still, see, they were on an hour behind us, the Ann Gunkel show. Behind us. But anyway, he still wanted to fill those 2 hours. So when she sold out to Barnett, that's how the NWA office in Atlanta got the 2 hour show. But other than that, wrestling across the board was a 60-minute deal.
Right.
And Memphis, I think, was 90.
Was it?
Yes.
That was later. I know when I worked that territory that I worked at late 68, 69, and late 70. It was, I think Memphis was only an hour, but yeah, later on, I think they did go to 90 minutes. But yeah, predominantly wrestling has been an hour show. So, but again, you know, it comes down to what people are accustomed to.
Right.
And everyone thinks wrestling has to be 2 hours.
Yes.
But here's the deal. ECW is pulling some decent numbers. It's not a great show, but they've only got 60 minutes.
Yeah, I think they would be a lot better with 90. I think 2 hours is a little bit too much for TNA.
Well, I could see. I like 2 hours if you're going to give me a match, some matches. Again, we were talking about this. I mentioned this on Steel Cage. When 4 minutes, 5 minutes is nothing. I mean, it's not time for. And with 2 hours to fill, my God, give me a 15-minute match here or there.
Yeah, when TNA did their one-time 90-minute show, it was a half-an-hour match. That was the other half an hour.
Yeah. Did you grow up on Memphis wrestling, John?
Oh, yes. I originally was born in the Detroit area, so it was, you know, growing up watching Bobo Brazil and the original Sheik and all. And then when I was about 10 years old, I moved down here to Kentucky. So I grew up on Memphis wrestling. I grew up on Angelo Poffo's promotion, ICW. I have tons of tapes of those promotions, also World Class, the Jim Crockett promotions. And I can watch those matches now, 20 years after the fact. I always tell the story. I've got on one of my tapes, it was one of the NWA syndicated shows. And on the show, for 1 hour, it was one match.
Right.
Three commercial breaks, one match. The Rock and Roll Express versus the Russians. And I can watch it today, and I never once grabbed the remote to hit the fast forward.
Well, you know, people say, well, you can't do this, you can't do that. If you built, and WCW, as bad as it was at times, when Bret Hart and Benoit did the memorial match in Kansas City for Owen, they went to two commercial breaks. But the key to that was obviously the two performers in the ring, A, but B, when they opened the show, they built it to make it something. And that's where I think no matter whose show it is today, they're so busy doing behind-the-scenes vignettes and this and that and the other thing, pyro, one thing and another, that the matches become secondary. And they're not made to be, it's just like last night on Raw. Jeff Hardy shows up and says, hey, I want to wrestle this guy. I said, hey, okay, cool. Well, that didn't take anything. Does that mean, how important was that match? It wasn't. But, you know, it's like anything else. It's you can sell a car that's not really a great car, but if you build it to be such, you'll get a better buck for it, and I think that's part of the problem with the business period overall today. But, yeah, I think you got a point, John, that the matches, you're right. If they're built properly, if the guys in the ring are allowed to do their job, then they can stretch them out.
Well, and it's surprising because, you know, like I said, I've got a huge collection of videotapes, and you know, you can go on places like YouTube or whatnot and see, you know, some old school promotions, and especially like ICW, the early days of guys like Randy Savage, Ronnie Garvin, Pistol Pez, Watley, and others, and I can watch some of these tapes that I've got, and yeah, it's hokey, it's so out of date with today's product, but overall, it's much more entertaining because there is more substance to what is going on with the feuds and the angles.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff from that will hold up, and of course, then there's some stuff that won't, obviously.
Right. PW Insider reports that Samoa Joe and AJ Styles were at Midway Games last week, working on the yet-to-be-titled TNA video game. Joe and Styles worked with the programmers for the game that is scheduled to be released next year. I'm looking forward to this game myself, John.
I am excited. My stepson, he's excited about it. We want to do Ultimate X.
I wish I could say something, you guys. I don't play video games.
I don't play that many games either, but this is one that I want to play.
Yeah, I get a few every year, usually a wrestling game or something similar to that. But yeah, this one I'm looking forward to. I'd like to see what Midway can do with the wrestling genre as far as video games go.
You know, you mentioned Joe. There's a guy, you know, and does everybody, I mean, I hate to be played like a mark, and to this day and age, I'm sure the marks hate to be played like marks, but Joe hasn't been pinned, but Joe has lost matches, and that Don West keeps saying, undefeated Joe. Excuse me?
Well, I look at it this way, and I was talking about this with some other people the other day, but they said, well, yeah, undefeated and unbeaten were like two different things, though.
Well, you know, you could say he hasn't lost a pinfall. And specify, I mean, there's nothing, you know, but to keep saying he's undefeated and this guy's undefeated. That worked with Goldberg how many years ago, but it's been, that was turned into a piece of crap, too, because they kept blowing it up.
Yeah.
But I think that it's not even important. Because I don't think anybody's buying into it anyway. And I think, you know,
I don't know. In my opinion, undefeated means you have not been pinned, and he hasn't been pinned.
Well, but I think I would specify that because I don't know that everybody just says it means realizes that it means that. I've worked in this business 46 years, and you just told me something I wasn't sure of.
And unbeaten means that you haven't lost a match.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
So there you go.
Hey.
Even Les can learn something.
You never stop learning this business.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Let me go down the ratings real quick, and then we'll get out of here. We'll go back to find out who won the pay-per-view prediction game. But the August 14th edition of WWE Raw did a final 4.1 cable rating. First hour scored a 3.9, second hour a 4.3. The week before that was a 4.2. On last Tuesday's ECW on Sci-Fi drew a 2.3 with a 4 share. That's up from the previous week's 2.2. ECW was the highest rated show on basic cable for that night. On Wednesday, the August 16th edition of 2006 WWE Diva Search Finals, featuring Layla winning the contest, drew a 1.9 cable rating with a 3.0 share. That's a lot higher, and I'm sure many were expecting the show to be, considering half the audience of wrestling didn't watch it. But
I'm surprised it rated anything. But anyway.
Yeah, but, you know, a lot of people are going to be saying you might as well get ready for it. It did better than TNA. The August 17th edition of TNA Impact drew a 0.9 cable rating with a 2.0 share. That's way up from last week, or the previous week's 0.7 rating, which could be a sign of things to come if UFC's audience keeps bringing in a solid lead-in for the company.
Well, that's the other thing, too, guys. If they go to 2 hours, will they be able to hold numbers? And that's part of it, too. And To me, if Jim Cornette is on my payroll, then Jim Cornette's going to have something to do with my storylines and my booking. And the fact, I'm sure they talk to him, but I mean, I would have him more involved than I believe that he is at this point. And if they go to 2 hours, I think that's going to be a necessity. Otherwise, they'll struggle.
Probably, yeah. Jonathan, what do you think?
Well, I'm a big fan of TNA. At the same time, for me, Central Time, 10 o'clock, it's too late. I really think, you know, you look at ECW, I mean, they're pulling 2.3s. You know, TNA's been on Spike now for, quite some time, and they're still pulling around, around a 0.1, give or take a percentage point or two. And I just think they need to move to an earlier time slot in order to see that rating rise.
I don't think they're ready for Monday, and I don't know that they'll ever be ready for Monday.
I had thought at one time that they, put them up on Tuesdays, but right now with what ECW is doing, I think they would lose to ECW.
Yeah. Well, I think here's the thing. We're talking about ratings, but I think what's going to keep that company in business, and don't get me wrong, I don't want anybody that's listening to this or in the chat room to think that I think that they're, and I'm not saying they're going out of business anytime soon. I'm not saying that at all, but although their numbers have come up in the time slot that they have on Spike, their pay-per-views haven't.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the money's at.
Right.
So that's what they're, so obviously whoever it is watching the show on Thursday nights, but they're not buying the pay-per-views.
Right.
And since they don't have house shows, well, you can say what Sadler's doing in the Southeast is their house shows, okay, but it's not theirs.
Right.
They may get a booking fee out of that, for every guy booked. They may get 10% of what that guy makes or something, or 15%. But
it's Hermie Sadler's show.
Yeah, but it's not like they're coming up with a $10,000 profit off of these houses or anything like that. So, I mean, they're still reaching in their pockets, and that's what we've got to look at. At what point does it become not a tax write-off but a liability?
Absolutely, something to think about. We'll have to keep watching wrestling, find out what's going to go down with TNA and what direction they're going to take after this.
If all of us are going to keep doing wrestling shows, we better keep watching wrestling.
Absolutely, Jonathan, tell everybody about your show and where they can find you at.
Well, of course, the Steel Cage is on every Tuesday night right before you guys here on the Wrestling Radio Network. Paul Swan, myself, you know, we talk about professional wrestling. You can find us on WrestlingRadioNetwork.com. We also have our very own MySpace page at MySpace.com/the_steel_cage. And, of course, you know, both of us being some old school guys, we have our own unique take on what the attitude of professional wrestling today.
And both professional radio guys, I might add.
Yes, we are.
Two pros. All right, check it out, guys. The Steel Cage over at WrestlingRadioNetwork.com. Jonathan Hayes, thanks for joining us tonight.
All right, well, thank you guys pretty much.
Jonathan, thanks a lot, and enjoy being with you.
Same here.
All right, guys, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, it's time to find out who's the better predictor. Who is the soothsayer of Wrestling Weekly? Is it Les Thatcher or is it Doc Young? Who won the SummerSlam pay-per-view prediction game? We're going to find that out right after this. And, of course, Jody, however you want to call him, or you can call him the Assassin, is going to be on the program. Hamilton is going to be with us.
You better call him Sir. You'll stuff your head and your rear end.
I will be calling him Sir. You can count on that.
All right.
We'll be right back, guys, after this. You're listening to Doc Young and Les Thatcher on Wrestling Weekly.
We know, you hate this part, but Wrestling Weekly will return after this short break.
Why are you doing this to me?
Hi, my name's Adam Newdelman, but I play the Phantom on the radio. I'm here to remind you that, screw that, my book, Mysteries of Wrestling South, is available at finer bookstores everywhere. That stupid fake voice, I hate it. I wrote a book along with Sir Adam Kleinberg called Mysteries of Wrestling. It has the questions that you wanted answered. Why does Steve Austin hate Jeff Jarrett? Are referees really blind and stupid and dumb? Who is actually the toughest wrestler in the business outside of the ring? Hulk Hogan, The Rock, Stone Cold Steve Austin, Kamala. We get down and dirty with insider facts you've never read about anywhere else. So what are you waiting for? It makes a great stocking stuffer. You're too short, you buy three of them, you get tall, you just stand on them. Mysteries of Wrestling Solved by ECW Press, written by Sir Adam Kleinberg and Adam the Phantom Newdelman. Available everywhere. It's done. The plug is done. I'm done. I didn't sell it well enough. There's naked pictures of China in there. Okay? Thank you.
So many of these wrestling websites nowadays strongly promote their pay-per-view play-by-plays as if they were something unbelievably special. The problem is that they are not special. In fact, they're all the same. Nothing separates one from the other, and if you've seen one, you've seen them all. However, there is one site that has original play-by-play that's different from all the rest. 4WWrestling.com, a proud supporter of the Voice of Wrestling radio show, invites you to witness the ultimate play-by-play experience, live during every WWE pay-per-view. And if you're asking what makes them so different, well, 4W-Wrestling.com is the only site to put up pictures from the actual pay-per-view as it happens. You see what's taking place on the pay-per-view instead of just reading about it. If you're not buying a pay-per-view, but you're looking for the next best thing, 4W-Wrestling.com. Online wrestling evolved.
Hey, do you find that wrestling is more to you than just a passing fancy? Do you need to know more about your favorite wrestler? Do you absolutely have to know all about their history? You, my friend, aren't just passionate. You're obsessed.
Geez, you know, that information might have been a little more useful to me yesterday.
We have a fix for that.
Throw me a frickin' bone here. Need the info.
Check out obsessedwithwrestling.com. All the info you need to know about everyone. Located at www.obsessedwithwrestling.com. Histories, title info, bios, aliases, real names.
Once again, things that could have been brought to my attention yesterday!
If wrestling isn't just a passion, but an obsession, check out www.obsessedwithwrestling.com today.
Doc Young and Les Thatcher back with you at Wrestling Weekly. Thanks for joining us, guys, tonight. We really appreciate it. Right now, we are going to get into, of course, SummerSlam, the pay-per-view prediction game.
You're so excited about this. I think you must have won. I think I'm aware of that going in.
We're going to have to see. First off,
okay,
of
all right, get on with it.
First off, what were your overall thoughts of SummerSlam?
It was there. I had said when I was on the steel cage, when I hear people reviewing shows today, they're saying it was good for what it was. It lacked logic. There's stories line. There's holes in the storyline. And I agree with all those things. And then I go back to think of what Pete Doyle said on our show a month or so ago, right? Everyone's too complacent and willing to buy into that. But I'm not on the payroll, so I'm not here to make excuses for WWE. But, of course, there's a lot of guys. They're trying a lot of different fits. And what I mean by that is they're putting guys together that, maybe normally they wouldn't have put together simply, I had mentioned a few months ago there was a chance for a lot of young guys to get a look, at the top a lot quicker because of deaths and injuries and retirements and firings and one thing and another. But not a lot of these guys were on this particular show, but then kind of realized that, the middle of this card was heavy with guys over the age of 40.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And plus Vince himself, being a part of that. It was all right. I guess I can say for what it was.
Don't be complacent.
I think the people showed that they feel a little bit about the Guerrero angle that you and I do. They're not real happy with it.
Right.
I'm just not comfortable with it. I'm sorry. I won't say that I knew Eddie better than anybody and Eddie wouldn't have liked it or would have liked it. I don't know. I won't be that. I won't say that one way or the other. But I don't like it.
Yeah.
I'm tickled to death if Vicky Guerrero is getting a payday, and there's no reason she shouldn't. But I'm just not comfortable with the angle, and I think it's gone on. My God, it's almost been a year.
Yeah.
It's gone on long enough.
Absolutely.
And I think the fans showed that. Batista needs to be led. And when I say that, that's not a horrible thing. A lot of guys in our business have made a lot of money needed to be led. Booker didn't, I can't blame it on Booker, but that wasn't a good match. The tag match with the McMahons and DX was just over. I mean, it's all they did with the eight guys or nine guys or 150 guys, however many they ran in, was make them look bad. But, of course, they've killed the spirit. I'm amazed at the talk about the fans being easy to please. 20 years ago, 30 years ago, if they'd have beat the hell out of the Spirit Squad the way they have now, the people would have stoned them before they got in the arena, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
I mean, to have even allowed them to hit you. And the fact that they're still carrying the tag belts doesn't say a lot, for the creative team.
Well, how many times have they, defended the belts? Three?
Well, I don't know. It seems like virtually any Tom, Dick, and Harry could beat them for the belts.
Yeah, it
I'm
does.
Surprised they don't put them on Eugene and somebody or something. I don't know.
I was waiting for that. Let's run through the list, find out who won and lost, and who got the predictions right.
Okay.
First off, it was Rey Mysterio versus Chavo Guerrero. Chavo ended up getting the victory. Rey's going to take a long extended vacation, heal up some injuries, and he'll be back with us.
Surgery.
He'll be back with us by WrestleMania. Les had went with Rey. I went with Chavo, so I get the point. Yes.
Okay, go on.
Okay, next was... It was the Big Show taking on Sabu in a match that was unannounced when we played this game. Big Show ended up winning, and no points for either. Hogan versus Orton. Hogan did not fool either one of us. We both knew Hogan was going to win. There was no way he was going to lose. Hogan beats Orton. That's a point for each of us. Mick Foley versus Ric Flair. Made a lot of sense, according to myself and Les, that Flair should go over. Mick's part-time guy. Flair needs a push. Mick doesn't mind doing jobs if it's worth something and if it elevates somebody else. All that led up to Flair winning, and we both got a point for that one. DX versus the McMahons, well, that was, it goes without saying that we both went with DX, and they ended up taking that. That was a point for each of us. Booker T versus Batista. Both of us had went with King Booker on this one to win. Booker actually lost the match by disqualification, but did not lose the title. Batista ends up the winner, no points for either. And in the final match, it was Edge versus Cena. And, well, Edge beat the hometown hero and kept the title. Les, you called that one.
Thank you. I did, you know, and you know what? I'm glad because that I think, I don't say it fooled anybody or everybody, but I think it took a few people, you know. I said, well, it's Boston, it's John's hometown, he's going to win.
Yeah, it fooled me because I went with Cena on that one.
Well, see, I'm glad. So we ended up tied.
We ended up tied for SummerSlam.
Yeah, okay.
So we're both amazing soothsayers.
I don't know if we're amazing or not. I don't know if that's a good analogy. Or that we're soothsayers. Or we guessed. We threw some enough against the wall and something stuck anyway.
We're good educated guessers.
I guess.
Well, we're going to take a break right now. You know, I know it's quick between breaks, but we've got to get our featured guest on the line right now. Joe Hamilton for Deep South Wrestling, and of course with the Assassin, Jody Hamilton, long, great career, and he goes back with Les a long ways, and we're going to get into that interview right after this commercial break. It's Doc Young and Les Thatcher. We'll be right back after this.
So many of these wrestling websites nowadays strongly promote their pay-per-view play-by-plays as if they were something unbelievably special. The problem is that they are not special. In fact, they're all the same. Nothing separates one from the other, and if you've seen one, you've seen them all. However, there is one site that has original play-by-play that's different from all the rest. 4WWrestling.com, a proud supporter of the Voice of Wrestling radio show, invites you to witness the ultimate play-by-play experience live during every WWE pay-per-view. And if you're asking what makes them so different, well, 4W-Wrestling.com is the only site to put up pictures from the actual pay-per-view as it happens. You see what's taking place on the pay-per-view instead of just reading about it. If you're not buying a pay-per-view, but you're looking for the next best thing, 4W-Wrestling.com. Online wrestling evolved.
Hey, do you find that wrestling is more to you than just a passing fancy? Do you need to know more about your favorite wrestler? Do you absolutely have to know all about their history? You, my friend, aren't just passionate. You're obsessed.
Geez, you know, that information might have been a little more useful to me yesterday.
We have a fix for that.
Throw me a freaking bone here. Need the info.
Check out obsessedwithwrestling.com. All the info you need to know about everyone. Located at www.obsessedwithwrestling.com. Histories, title info, bios, aliases, real names.
Once again, things that could have been brought to my attention yesterday!
If wrestling isn't just a passion, but an obsession, check out www.obsessedwithwrestling.com today.
Doc Young and Les Thatcher back here with you at Wrestling Weekly. Thanks for joining us, sticking around with us. We got our featured guest online, Les.
Yeah, we sure do. And my young co-host said, we've got our guest is the owner of Deep South Wrestling, which is like the tip of the iceberg. I met this guy back in 1963. I was about in the third year of my career, and he was, I think, in like a six-year veteran at the time, had a tag team partner. They were wrestling as the Bolos, and I've worked the Charlotte territory with this guy, the Phoenix territory, the Knoxville territory, and we were on opposite sides of the fence in the War of Atlanta. But more importantly, probably the top masked tag team in this business of the 46 years I've been in it, but from the early 60s through the mid 70s, these guys drew money in every territory they went in. This guy has booked territories. He was a great psychologist. I think one of the feature thing was these guys were a heel tag team that didn't scream and holler on their interviews. They talked and made sense, and I want to introduce a guy who's been a longtime friend of mine, Joe Hamilton. Joe, welcome to the show.
Well, appreciate it, man. Thanks for inviting me.
That's all right, and you can send me a check for that good introduction, too.
Be a small one.
I've got your book. I mentioned this before we went on the air. If you haven't read, Doc, you've got the information on how to order the book, right?
You can get it off of our website at our shop.
Okay, cool.
Go to WrestlingWeekly.com.
Right, it's the assassin, the man behind the mask, and it's Joe's book. And I said, I feel like I've lived this damn thing. But in 63, you and Tom had been together at that point when we met in Charlotte. How long?
2 years.
2 years.
Yeah.
And
we actually teamed up in the latter part of 61.
Okay. And, of course, that was just the start. And you guys did. You drew money in every territory you worked.
Yeah, we had a hell of a combination, you know, and we gelled together from the very first night. You know, the very first night we worked together, I had never met Tom. And even though a year or so earlier, he and my brother had been tag partners in the Carolinas, but I had never met Tom, and so I was already in the Atlanta area. And they decided to bring Tom in. And that was because Jim Crockett wanted to get Tom a little closer to the Carolinas because he was such a big card there. And he was putting all of his eggs, at that time, he was putting a lot of his eggs in one basket, which was with Buddy Rogers. And he didn't trust Buddy Rogers, which a lot of people didn't.
No.
You know, and some of them had probably had good reason. But he wanted to get Tom. Tom was in Houston working as Tony Martin. But he wanted to get Tom closer back here in case something happened that was drastic as far as Rogers pulling out or whatever, which he was famous for, that Crockett would have close access to Tom to bring Tom back in, you know. And anyway, they called me and told me that they were bringing Tom in, wanted us to team up. What did I think about it? You know, that's fine with me. And so Tom called me when he got in town on a Friday, and he was staying at a hotel downtown. And I said, well, I'll come by and pick you up, and we'll go to the arena together. So okay. So I went by and I picked him up, and we sat and chatted for a little while in the car before we took off for the arena. And there was a very relaxed atmosphere between us, even though we had never met before. And then we got to the arena, and that very first night, I'll never forget, we were up against Gunkel and McIntyre, and they were the champions, and they owned the territory and everything, you know. And in 5 minutes, I knew we had something special, and so did Tom. And of course, Tom had a good bit more experience than I did at that particular time. But just 5 minutes into the match, I mean, I knew what he was going to do. I knew I could anticipate what he was setting up. He could anticipate what I was setting up and so on. And all we ever did was get better. You know, we started out good.
Right.
And all we ever did was get better, I thought. You know.
To back up a little bit, when they read the book, they'll see this too. How old were you when you and Larry worked the main event in Madison Square Garden?
19.
19 years old, and you've been in the business how long?
That was 58, and I started full time September the 3rd, 57.
So talk about a quick turnaround, and I read the book, but I know the feeling about walking out the first big house you've ever worked on, and especially when you're on top. But the funny thing about that whole incident in New York is when Toots gave you the big envelope.
Oh, yeah.
And I knew the punchline before I got to it. But tell our listeners a little bit about that particular story about the big envelope.
Well, we worked in New Haven, Connecticut, and it was a hell of a house. And I knew we were going to get a good payoff, you know. So instead of paying off that night, they made everybody an appointment. At that time, Toots Munt and Johnny Doyle, they had the suite, penthouse suite at the San Moritz, which at that time, I don't know if it is still now or not, but at that time, that was the elite hotel in New York, you know, right across from Central Park and all that. And anyway, they give us an allotted time to be there, so or an appointed time to be there. So we showed up and knocked on the door, and Toots opened the door, you know. And I don't know if you ever met Toots Munt or not, but Toots was had a a very deep, booming voice when he talked.
Yeah.
And anyway, he invited us in, shook our hands and everything, and then they chit-chatted for a few minutes. And he came out with a receipt book, and we signed our signed receipts and stuff, and he gave us the envelope. Well, this envelope that he gave me, you know, that thing was about 2 inches thick, you know. And I said, my God, how much money can possibly be in this envelope? Well, I didn't want to show how green and dumb I was, so I put it in my pocket. But every once in a while, I couldn't believe it. You know, every once in a while, I'd reach my hand in my pocket to feel that envelope to make damn sure it hadn't gone anywhere. You know, and in the meantime, Toots, who really, really liked my brother, and Toots was he was a sharp guy. I mean, he was smart. And anyway, I'll never forget, while they were talking, I kept reaching in my pocket and feeling that thing, you know. And then I'll never forget Toots's words, because Toots was trying to give my brother some worldly advice, you know.
Yeah.
And he says, my boy, as you walk through life, never fight with your enemies. He says, wine them and dine them. He says, and never drag them to the edge of the cliff. He says, you waltz them there. And as he's saying all this, he's making all the gestures about hand gestures where that would simulate whining and dining.
Right.
And simulate waltzing them to the edge of the cliff. And then the coup de grace was, he says, and when you get them to the edge of the cliff and they're teetering on the edge, my boy, you never push them off. He said, you goose them. And he was famous for that, you know. Anyway, to get back to the other story and everything, of course, my brother, he'd been in the business about 6 years longer than me. So he knew what the old trap was. They didn't even bother doing that to him. They just give him a regular-sized envelope, you know. So when we got on the elevator, I couldn't wait because we were the only ones on the elevator. I ripped that thing open. I'm looking at it, and it was a hell of a payoff, you know. If I remember right, it was $500 or something like that. But most of it was in fives and tens, and had a bunch of ones in there, you know. Hell, it took me 20 minutes to count the damn
thing. I was waiting to hear it's all one.
I thought it seemed like that. Yeah, I knew the punchline when I started reading it. I said, yes, I know where this is.
Oh, wow.
You know, one of the guys that you've known for so long that I first met in Calgary in 62, but I loved him, and the last time I saw him was in 85 up in St. Joe, was Etchison.
Ronnie Etchison, yeah.
Yeah, what a great guy.
Yeah, Ronnie was a good guy, you know. And after Larry and I left New York, Larry had a very lucrative deal to go into the Carolinas, which is where he actually ended up teaming up with Thomas, you know, a year or so later. And I was happy with that because Larry wanted me to go to Charlotte with him, and Crockett says, I don't really have any room. And I didn't want to go in there, and I wanted to get out from underneath my brother's thumb, so to
right.
speak, you know. And I knew that I was just on the threshold of really trying to learn to work. Because, you know, technically, hell, I ain't been in the business but, 6 months. You know, if figured out full-time, I start in September 3rd, 57, and then in May 24th of 58, I'm on top of the garden. You know, so 6 months in the business and everything doesn't qualify you to be a polished worker.
Right.
By any stretch of the imagination. So I knew I wanted to get out away from my brother's influence and so on. And even though he never, ever gave me anything but sterling advice, you know. But I just wanted to get out on my own and everything. So Ronnie, at that time, Ronnie Etchison, was living in San Jose, California. And he had a little business out there called the Spud Nut Shop. Where they did, you know, they made fried pies and donuts and stuff like that, you know. And anyway, he got me booked out there for Mousewitz, Joe and Frank Mousewitz.
Right.
And Joe Mousewitz was a very, very nice guy. I didn't get along too well with Frank. I thought Frank was a little abrasive, but I never had much to do with him. But Joe Mousewitz was a first-class gentleman. And anyway, I went out there, and that's where I first met Nick Bockwinkle. Bockwinkle was in the Army station there at Fort Ord. And I met Don Manuki in there, and there was a bunch of old-timers there, too, you know. And But that was another great learning experience for me, and I liked. Of course, Ronnie's the one that was instrumental in getting me there, and I never forget. Ronnie had a real nice home up on a big hill there in Santa Cruz. So his wife, Almeida, because I'd known Ronnie, you know, ever since I was a little kid.
Right.
And she had me out in the yard, and she's showing me these grapefruit trees she's got in her backyard. They had the biggest damn grapefruits on them I've ever seen in my life. And while we're out there, now, like I say, his house was built on this hill, so his yard slanted down, you know. And it was up high, and you could overlook, you could see the ocean, you know, it wasn't that far away. And everything, it was a beautiful, beautiful spot. And while we were out there, that was the first earthquake I'd ever been in. And the damn ground started trembling. And I'm looking around, and of course, I'd been in the cups a little bit the night before, you know. I wasn't sure what the hell was happening to me. And I looked at Almeida, and she looked at me, and she says, oh, we experience this a couple of times a week, you know. And I said, oh, okay, I'm glad. I thought I was fixing to lose it here on that beer I had last night.
Yeah. I have a question for you real quick.
Go ahead. And
I know that, you know, I'm 32 years old. I'm kind of young. I wasn't back there in the 60s and 70s
it.
And stuff like that.
You'll get old someday.
But a lot of the new fans have this question, and it seems like a real simple question with a real simple answer, but who was assassin number one and who was assassin number two? Because there's a lot of speculation, and there's, you know, depending on who you talk to, it's either way.
Well, I came in here I came into Atlanta in October, and I was supposed to come in as the Iron Russian from Florida, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So when I got here, they had changed my name from the Iron Russian to the Assassin. So I am Assassin number one.
Ah.
So when they brought Tom in, to differentiate us, they said, okay, we're Assassin number one, Assassin number two. Since I was the first one here, they gave me Assassin number one. Ray Gunkel, who wrote almost all the articles and stuff in the program and stuff, when he would write, he would deliberately, now he claimed this was deliberate. I always thought that it was typos, and he was just in too big a hurry to go back and change it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But when he'd write articles about us and everything, he'd get it and turn it backwards.
Right.
He'd have Tom as number one and me as number two, which, you know, Tom always made sure that there wasn't any difference between one and two was just a moniker to be able to identify us with.
Right.
And not that there was any difference in the team.
Right.
And, of course, when we first teamed up, I couldn't interview worth a damn. And Tom was an expert already, you know. But Tom said, I will not do an interview unless we both have equal time on the interview. The reason being is Tom didn't want anybody to get the impression that there was a weak link on the team. And if one guy took all the interview time and one guy talked more than the other guy and so on, then in his mind, and which was true,
yeah,
or is true, in his mind, the people and the fans would automatically think that the guy that does all the talking is the better of the two.
Mm-hmm.
And the other guy, the more silent of the two and everything, was the weak link.
Right.
And Tom made sure that that never happened. So nobody ever knew, nobody really ever knew who in the hell was one and who in the hell was number two. And like I say, it didn't really make a damn to me and Tom anyway. But it just, as fate would have it, I guess, that's how the one and two thing came about. I was here first. They called me one, and Tom come in about a month later, and he was two.
I think the unique thing, and I remember the first promo I heard these guys cut, Doc, was in Roanoke, I believe. But I had grown up in this area listening to Dick the Bruiser and, you know, and guys like that doing heel stuff. And they made sense. And the Bolos weren't the Assassins at the time. They talked like human beings, and they didn't talk. They talked intelligently.
They didn't growl.
No, and the amazing thing was they got more heat than if they had been yelling and screaming. And Joe, tell the people a little bit, too, about how you guys worked with the Kentuckians. This is the Kentuckians, for those who don't know, were Big Boy Brown. And, well, Jake Roberts is daddy, and he had several names. Use whatever, Tiny Andy.
Yeah, when he was a Kentuckian, he was Tiny Smith.
Yeah.
And he later on graduated to Grizzly Smith.
Right, exactly.
You know?
But you guys first worked with him, was it Charlotte the first time?
As a team?
Yeah.
No, Florida.
Florida?
Yeah, they had been in Charlotte. And we were working TV in Tampa one day, and Eddie Graham came up to us, and he said, do you know these guys? And he showed me a picture of them and everything, and I didn't know Big Boy Brown. But I had worked with Tiny Smith a lot of times in Oklahoma. And I said, yeah, I said, I know this guy from Oklahoma. So we were talking back and forth, da-da-da-da-da, and he said, do you think you guys could do anything? We brought him in. He says, Crockett wants to get rid of him. And I said, well, you know, he said, so think about it. And he says, let me know tomorrow. And I said, okay. So me and Tom didn't know either one of them. So Tom was asking me about Tiny and everything, and we got our heads together and come up with some stuff and presented to Eddie. He liked it. He brought him in, and that was actually the beginning of the Tag Team Association with the Assassins, the Kentuckians, and then the Great Bolo and Bolo and the Kentuckians.
And how many territories did you actually work with those guys in?
Oh, Jesus.
Four.
Well, we worked the Carolinas. We worked Florida. We worked Georgia. We worked Oklahoma. We worked Arizona.
California.
We worked California. We worked Vancouver.
Wow.
You know.
And you made money with them every place, right?
Yeah, we drew huge money with those guys, yeah.
Yeah.
We drew damn near a sellout crowd at the old Olympic Auditorium out there right in the middle of the Watts riots. When we were scheduled for a Friday night show, the riots broke out, and we had to postpone it and do it that Sunday at 1 o'clock in the afternoon with very little publicity, and we still almost sold out.
Wow.
I remember in 63 they were in Charlotte at the time, and that's the first time I'd met any of the four of you, but you guys were doing that. Of course, Charlotte was – that's the thing, too, jumping forward a little bit – Charlotte was always a tag team territory up until George turned it around in the late 70s, or the mid 70s, I guess, with Valentine. But that's an art. You're a trainer today, and I'm a trainer. That's an art that's being lost. The art of tag team wrestling.
Well, it is, because you know nowadays so many teams go out there and within the confines of having a tag match, they actually end up having two single matches.
Yes.
You know, there's very little tagging in and out like Tom and I used to do. There's very little psychology anymore applied into tag team matches. And tag team matches are, to me, are not nearly as exciting as they were back in the days when you were working with, you know, when you had a match that existed between, say, the Kentuckians and the Great Bolo and Bolo, or the Great Bolo and Bolo against the Scott brothers, you know.
Right.
Or the Assassins against the Kentucky, you know. And it goes on and on, you know, against El Mongol and the Pro, you know, or the Torres brothers and so on. So the psychology of tag team wrestling is it's on its way out, because, first of all, nobody knows how to teach it anymore.
Right.
And secondly, since nobody knows how to teach it, it's a foreign thing to most everybody, including a lot of promoters and so on. So the promoters, you know, especially your independent promoters and everything, they take a look at a match and their tag match, and they think if a guy goes out and takes a half a dozen good bumps and screams and hollers at the people and in unison, the two heels will turn around and really, really, really get that red hot heat by turning and telling the crowd to shut up. You know, I mean, that's really a hell of a heel move, boy.
I want to interrupt you. You told me this, guys. I don't know when we had this conversation. But some guy, you told some kid he thought he was a heel because he was screaming obscenities at some old lady, but you said you're not being a heel, you're just being a jackass.
Yeah.
And that's
well, it's
Tom.
True. It's yeah. true. You know, it's like, you know, Tom's philosophy was, first of all, we very, very seldom ever raised our voices in our interviews, as
right.
you well know.
Right.
We didn't have to because we had something that nobody else was delivering in our interviews. You know, and there's one ingredient that you need in an interview. If you want that interview to come across, there's one ingredient you have to have in it. You know what it is?
Go ahead.
The air of sincerity.
Yes.
If you're not sincere with your interviews, and believe me, Tom and I were sincere with our interviews. You know, we got wound up in those interviews, and we believed, whenever we had an interview, we believed what the hell we were talking about. You know, and that's the thing that nobody does anymore today. Most of the interviews today are, they sound like carnival hypes.
Right.
You know, and that's why so many people sit, and of course, everybody's got a goddamn remote control. You know, they're sitting there and they see all these hyped up interviews and stuff on TV and everything. They just reach up there with that remote control, brother, and you're in Never Never Land with a channel changer.
Yeah. I think one of the things that made Arn Anderson's interviews so strong was the fact that he came across as sincere.
Yeah.
He meant what he said.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you
100%. You know, and as far as the level of intensity and so on, you always have to be intense.
Right.
But there's a difference between being intense and being loud. You don't have to be loud to be intense.
No.
You know, and let's face it. You don't like it. I don't like it. Nobody likes it. If you get the feeling that this guy that you're in conversation with, or these two guys, or whomever you're in conversation with, are talking down to you.
Right.
And if you talk intelligently, and you know what you're talking about, and you are in control of the conversation, then it comes across like you're talking down to people. And that pisses anybody. That pisses anybody off. It
sure.
pisses me off if somebody tries to talk down to me. You know.
Mm-hmm.
And I know. I think everybody feels that way.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and I think that's also one of the things that was key to getting you guys over, at least to me anyway, as I recall it, was that you wrestled your opponents as well. You healed, but that was when you looked like you were going to be out. I mean, you weren't meat choppers. You went out and...
No, that was not... Meat cutting wasn't our style.
No.
You know, and, you know, I mean, we were very versatile as far as being able to adapt different styles and so on. But we never lost the basics of our style, which was we were wrestling heels. We weren't meat cutters.
Well, and I think too that when you beat the baby faces, the fans realized you would beat somebody because you had to step over the line because they knew you could wrestle as well.
Absolutely.
You know, and I think that's what's missing in today too.
Well, you know, guys don't know how to go out and make their opponents. You know, you can,
right.
you can take a guy out there and that's why I was never a believer in squash jobs.
Yeah.
You know, and unfortunately, Barnett brought, I made a lot of money with Barnett. I really did. And later on, when he no longer owned the territory and so on, Jim and I became good friends and remained good friends to the day he died. In fact, a couple of days before he died, he and I, he used to call me all the time, and we'd have long conversations on the phone because the guy was lonesome, you know.
Yeah.
Nobody come around to see him anymore after all the stars that this guy had made and all the money he'd made those stars and so on. Everyone deserted him, you know. Nobody
right.
wanted to have anything to do with him. And it wasn't just because of his sexual orientation either, you know.
Right,
It was just because, make a long story short, it was because he was such an ass while he was in charge of,
right.
Of territories and stuff, you know. And, hell, I had some very, very heated arguments with him when he was on Georgia Championship and stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But Jim was one of those promoters that loved squash jobs, and that's how he got Abdullah over and so on. And he thought that was the way. And because Channel 17, at that time, it was in its infancy insofar as its coverage around the country was, and then all of a sudden here you emerge with the biggest and hottest babyface in the country was Tommy Rich, for God's sake. You know, and one of the hottest heels around was Abdullah and Professor Tanaka and so on. And but how did they get over? You know, Jim loved squash jobs. He thought that Abdullah go out there and kill some poor kid that had never won a match in his life and everything, and send him out there with Abdullah, and Abdullah kill him in a minute and a half, 2 minutes, then Abdullah had to get over.
Right.
Yeah.
You know.
But well, you know, that's something too. I think I was saying, I was talking to Doc earlier, that I said it's driving me crazy, and it's not just it's both the companies that are on major television now. Is there's every week there's a pull apart, every week there's a run in, there's an outside interference. And I said, I was always taught if you knew how to work, you can put a guy over and not lose your steam. And that art is gone down by the wayside too, I think, at this point.
Well, you know, there's everybody has a different concept of the business and so on, and I've heard I hear so much criticism from people of my generation and my era. About the business today and so on, and there's stuff in this about the business today that I don't particularly agree with and I don't particularly like, but I mean, let's face it, you know, and Vince has come under harsh criticism from a lot of people in my age group and generation, not only lay people but also people that. However, how many survivors we've got left in the business, you know. That's my age. Some of them have voiced their criticism of Vince and so on. But, I mean, let's face it now. You can go ahead and criticize Vince, but how in the hell can anybody honestly sit back and say that everything he did was wrong and everything when he has brought wrestling to a pinnacle of awareness by the people to where his stars and everything are so well known that they're known everywhere in the country, you know. And he got off on the right foot with Hogan. Hogan was probably the most publicized athlete in the entire world at one time because of all the publicity.
Right, true.
You know, here's a guy. He had his own line of vitamins. He had his own comic books. You know, and he had the cartoons about him, and he had this and he had that, and he was a bigger than life star. Why? Because Vince made him a bigger than life star.
You're right.
You know, and he also elevated the pay standard for wrestlers. And he brought it up to a pay scale that was completely and totally unheard of or even unanticipated ever in the annals of wrestling as I was growing up in it.
That's true, too.
You know? And so how in the hell can you, and plus he's been successful with it. So how in the hell can you say that everything that Vince has done is wrong?
Oh, you can't.
Know, sure he's done things that I wouldn't have done,
yeah.
You know, but then had I been doing what Vince or been in Vince's spot, I doubt seriously that I would have been able to bring wrestling to the peak that it's at right now, especially the peak of awareness, you know, and he's talking about an international company, you know. I mean, my God, WWE makes more on merchandising, for Christ's sakes, and all the promoters to combine used to make off of houses, you know, back in
right.
The days of territories.
You're right. No, I've always said I don't always agree what he does, but I agree with his right to do it. I mean, he's sacrificed to get where he's at, and he's done a hell of a job to do it. You're right.
Oh, yeah. You know, he's changed the face. He's changed the face of wrestling, but the one good thing that I am glad that he changed was the damn pay scale.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
You're right.
When during the Monday Night Wars, you headed up the power plant for WCW, right?
Yep.
And how was that?
Oh, I
how was the experience
it.
For you?
I loved doing that, and I love doing what I'm doing with WWE now, you know?
Yeah, what kind of guys did you get to work with as far as training and bringing up from nothing to become big stars?
Oh, there's some jabroni around, what the hell's his name, Triple H.
Oh, yeah, I heard of him some.
Yeah, you know, he's one of those obscure stars, but he managed to get by, I guess. You know, and Goldberg and... you know, and Big Show, the list goes on, you know, God, I don't know, I can't, Dallas Page, I've trained so damn many guys, you know, that actually have become big stars and everything that, that's one of the things that keeps me at least thinking young, you know. I don't feel that young anymore when I try to get out of bed in the morning, the knees. Yeah.
Amen, bro.
Yeah, you got to oil them, you know. But, you know, this is, I'm actually going through my third career in the same profession. I had all my years in the ring, and then I had 12 years of satisfaction out of the business with WCW, where I ran the power plant, and of course I was on the road with production, and I was part of the booking committee, and and all that. And then when they sold WCW and so on, then I thought, what the hell? I was offered a job on the creative team to go up to Connecticut, and I didn't want to move to Connecticut, so I respectfully declined. And then shortly after that, we started talking about me opening up a developmental camp for them and so on. And then for one reason or another, that kept getting put off and put off and put off and everything. And it was actually about a year and a half, 2 years before we ever really got the ball rolling on it, you know. But now I'm in my third career in the same profession, and I'm having a ball at it, you know.
You know what? I agree with you. That's what's kept me feeling young too, is working with the kids.
Yeah.
And speaking of kids, you've got one of my jabronis down there in Nykirk. How's he doing?
He's getting called up, brother.
Good. Is he behaving?
Getting called up. We're losing a bunch of them.
Yeah.
We've already lost Knox.
Yeah.
Which, keep an eye on him, because in a few years he's going to be world champion. You know, I mean, he's that good. He's one of the best big men I've ever seen.
Wow.
We're losing Knox. We're losing Nykirk. We're losing O'Reilly. We're losing MVP. We're losing the Deacon. We're losing Perez. Jesus, you know. So.
So how's Deep South going overall right now for you guys?
Doing very good. Doing very good. We still do our tapings every Thursday night. You know, we're on CSS, and they just changed our time slot because of their commitments to SEC football. So we're, instead of being on from 11 to 12 Sunday nights, we're going to be on from 11:30 to 12. We'll go to a 30-minute show until November, and then we go back to a 60-minute show.
Ah.
But we're also on Channel 6, or start on September the 9th on Channel 6 UPN station out of Tallahassee.
Okay.
And we're also going on MAV TV.
All right.
And MAV TV right now probably only goes into, 600,000, 700,000 homes, but they are also negotiating right now with one of the cable networks and so on, so that might turn into something good for us, too.
Yeah, that may have. I've heard about, they're not on the our cable system here, but they're just young, too, right?
They're in their infancy and so on, and as a matter of fact, some of their work is probably on, if you've got Discovery Channel, you'll have an opportunity to see some of their stuff, because anything pertaining to motocross, they do it.
Oh, okay.
You know, so whenever you see anything that's got motocross on it, on the Discovery Channel and everything, MAV TV does it.
Cool.
Yeah, I get MAV TV, so I'm very happy. I can't wait to see some.
I'll tell you what,
I
like the crew of guys you got working. DeMont was up here with me for a while when I was with WWE, and Dave Taylor too. And I think Taylor brings another dimension, the English style.
Yeah.
The kids, and I know the kids here just really enjoyed working with Dave. So.
Yeah.
And along with yourself, man, there's a lot of years of experience there too.
About 175 or 80. And I've got two-thirds of it.
You do. You damn sure do. You damn sure do. But
oh, yeah. Well, what the hell? You know, this year, because I actually had my very first match in 1956, so this is my 50th anniversary.
Wow. I just celebrated my 46th anniversary July the 4th.
Yeah.
And that's I'm like you, my third career in the same business.
Yeah. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it is. But, you know,
and once it gets in your system, you can't get it out.
Yeah. I've told the kids to go down there. I said, if you can't learn from Joe, he'll just put his foot up your... He'll put you out the door. So, but, no, I think you love the business. You respect the business, and that's what you bring to the table. And I think that's what the younger trainers, or the guys trying to be trainers that are young, don't understand, and the kids trying to learn from them don't understand.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's very bad because in certain areas, because Vince and I had a long talk before I took this thing over, and what Vince told me he wanted guys out of the Deep South camp that could perform in the ring and could use some psychology. He said, you know, Vince admitted to me, he said, you know, he says, I'm partially to blame. He said, because there's nowhere out there for these guys to learn to work.
Yeah.
You know, he says, there's no territories anymore for these guys to hone their skills, so to speak.
Right.
So, I'm surprised he acknowledged that, but yeah.
Oh, no. Well, you know, Vince, he's very much aware of if he has any shortcomings. Of course, he keeps it all to himself. Mm-hmm. But he's one of those guys. He's his own most harsh critic. Believe
no,
me,
I, Joe,
because
I,
he's a perfectionist.
Yeah. One of his people asked me what about Terry, and I said, you know what? I said, I think Vince would tell you himself that the biggest mistake was killing all the territories because that's where the education came in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, he told me that's what he wanted out of the developmental camp and so on and everything, and that's what we're churning out. You know, these kids that we're churning out, they excel in many facets of the business. You know, first of all, their performance in the ring is unparalleled. We've trained them on the stick, you know, so they can talk and have interviews and stuff. And most of all, the biggest thing is I've taught them to respect their profession. That I don't give a shit how many people knock your business and knock the profession and so on. You know how hard it is because the people that are knocking it, they don't know what the hell they're talking about because none of them have ever gone through what you guys have gone through with this training camp. They don't know what it takes to become a professional wrestler. They don't know what hard work and dedication it takes to become a professional wrestler, and they don't know the physical abuse that's reaped on your own body to learn your profession. I said, so when people knock your business and everything, I said, the days of standing up and fist fighting them, and like I did a couple of times and got sued, you know, but those days are dead and gone. But by the same token, you can verbally stand up for your business, and if nothing else, the way you carry yourself in the business and just your general attitude towards the business and towards the public and everything will make you a professional.
Amen.
Very well said.
Amen.
Man, I'm dizzy right now from all this information. I have to listen to this interview a couple times and soak this all up. But I really appreciate you being on the show, and I've learned a lot.
You know what? We're running out of time. But, Joe, when Doc, looks all, I guess, let's do it again because we've just barely scratched the surface, and I've enjoyed this so much because you're saying a lot of things that I say, but you're saying them better.
Well, just let me know when you want to do it again, old timer.
All right, old timer.
So we'll talk to you again soon, and
all right.
Like I said, check out, of course, all Joe's stuff, Deep South Wrestling, of course, on TV, coming to MAV TV soon. I can't wait.
And
buy the book.
And absolutely.
What's your website?
Yeah, what is your website?
My website is dswrestling.com.
DS?
All right, and then there's an assassin site too, right?
Yeah, but it's not up on that one.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. So check out the book, guys.
And let me say, I'm not done with it yet. I'm trying to think where I'm at on this. Oh, you're in the Atlanta office now.
Which time? Atlanta was like a revolving door, like Florida was, you know.
You'd come back from Florida. It was after the war and that whole thing.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Real quick before we go, I was going to say I remember. I can't remember who it was during the war of Atlanta, but they came to Sully and I, and they said, "Well, you remember Ray Candy got married in Savannah, right?"
Yeah, yeah.
And they wanted us to say Ann Gunkel married Ray Candy. And if people that don't know who Ray Candy is, Ray was a black man. And Gordon and I looked at each other, and at the same time, we both said, "No, we're not going to say that."
Wow.
Because this was back in 1973, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
And that was,
yeah. Well, yeah. That's why Tom, who was booking for Ann, that's why Tom got that big guy named Gorilla Watts, you know, and he was wrestling with somebody else. Tom named me Gorilla Watts because Bill Watts was booking for NWA.
I know. But seriously, let's do it again because there's a lot of stories that Joe can tell, and I'm enjoying just going reminiscing, going down memory lane with you. My friend, you are a credit to our business, and I'm proud to call you my friend, and bless you, and I thank you so much for being on the show tonight.
Well, thanks for inviting me. I had a hell of a time. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Joe.
Okay, take care.
Joe Hamilton, the assassin, here on Wrestling Weekly. Guys, that's going to wrap things up. If you are on the East Coast of the United States, enjoy ECW. For everybody else, of course, the Irish Whip is coming up. They've got Farrell from Playboy Radio. He is going to be on the show. Does a lot of interviews on Playboy with some of the wrestlers and things like that. And he's got some stories for everybody. So check that out. The Irish Whip coming up next here on the Wrestling Radio Network.
And we have to get Joe back on, really.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And
I can't plug the book enough because it's truthful and they're great stories, and we've just scratched the surface. We could have gone on for another hour and a half. I had more, you know, because it's bringing back a lot of memories to me because, like I say, a lot of these, I lived a lot of this, worked the same territories and with a lot of the same people.
But, definitely. It's called Behind the Mask.
Yeah, it's a great read.
Next week, guys, we've got Ring of Honor's Jimmy Jacobs. He's going to be on the program, and, of course, former WWE. He was a member of the Heartthrobs tag team. Romeo Rosselli is going to be on the program next week. So,
all right, cool.
So check us out, guys. Of course, next week, Tuesday, 8 p.m. Eastern. For Les Thatcher, I'm Doc Young. Good night, everybody.